Hello, my name is Andreina.
And my name is Gabriela, and this is Wicks and Candles,
a podcast about two sisters and their obsession with period film.
Join us on a trip through palaces and manors, balls and tea parties, and a lot of dresses, carriages, and of course, wicks and candles.
In this episode, Hilma. So, Gabby, we're meeting today for the first time in a long time to kick off the fifth season of our podcast. We took a break and enjoyed an unforgettable summer vacation. We spent some time together and made incredible memories.
It was definitely unforgettable, Nene. You came to visit me, and we did many things. And among them, I think it would be fair to highlight all the art we have experienced together this summer.
Absolutely. It was the summer of art. It was the summer of museums for both of us. We had the incredible opportunity to visit some museums together, and we talked a lot about art in general.
Absolutely. And this is one of our favorite topics. And that somehow led us to pick the film that we are discussing today, which combines these two passions, film and art.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been talking about this for a while now, that we wanted to do a more thematic season. So perhaps this might be the theme of the season, where we're going to explore the lives and the stories of female artists. So today we're talking about Hilma, to kick off this exploration of women in art and in period film, art in period film, women in art in period film. So yes, we're talking about Hilma, a biopic about the Swedish artist Hilma af Klint. And I know this film was special for you in some way, and this is why you recommended it.
Well, yes. And if I'm allowed, I would like to tell why. I saw this film on a flight last year. I was coming to visit you, and I found it on the movie selection in the plane. And of course, it got my attention immediately because, as you know, I'm such an art freak, and I had heard about Hilma briefly in a podcast, and I was like immediately attracted to the film. So I watched it, and for some reason, it moved me immensely. Of course, it might be primarily because I was going through some personal turmoil at the moment, and I had recently acknowledged that I needed to take my love for art more seriously in my life, and so watching the film triggered that very strongly. The fact is, while watching the film, I got super emotional, and I started sobbing, which rarely happens. So I had to take a break and continue afterwards. So when I finally landed and came to you, I said, okay, I had this experience in the plane with this film. I think this is something that we should watch together.
Well, yes. And we finally did. And I have to say, it was a summer night at your house, and we had such a remarkable few weeks already talking about art, reading books about art, visiting museums, and talking about the artists that we loved and why they're important to us. And just watching this movie was a very moving experience for me as well, both because of the experience that you had with it and the story that came with it, but also because the film itself touches on so many topics that are important for us and for this podcast that we, you know, that we talk about, you know, mainly women in the past and women's expression throughout history and so on. So it was a remarkable experience, I have to say. Yeah, so just for the film itself, I found it really moving. But why don't we start with some general facts?
Sure, Nene. Hilma is a biopic from 2022, and it tells the story of Swedish artist Hilma af Klint, starting in her youth till her death. It was written and directed by Lasse Hallström, and it stars Tora Hallström as Hilma, or young Hilma, Catherine Schock as Anna Cassell, who was one of the closest friends of Hilma af Klint, and Lena Olin as older Hilma. The film was released in October 2022, as mentioned, starting in Sweden, and after doing the festival circuit in Europe, it debuted in North America at the Palm Springs International Film Festival in January 2023. We didn't find many more facts to mention about the film, but listening the names of Lasse Hallström, who's a renowned director, and actress Lena Orling gives us a good hint and certainly good credentials of the high caliber cast displayed in this film.
Now, Gab, you're the one who told me about Hilma. I didn't really know her name or her art or her anything about her. And you're the one who started to tell me about her life. Can you tell us a little bit about who she was and how did you come to know her?
Hilma af Klint is indeed rather unknown to the general audience. And it is partly because of her own will, and partly, of course, because art history has excluded women in many cases, and Hilma has been one of her. I heard about Hilma af Klint for the first time through Katie Hessel's podcast, the Great Women Artists podcast. So I was just very superficially familiar with her name and with her art. So going back to Hilma herself, her story remained untold for very long because in her will, she really stated that some of her works should not be displayed until much later after her death. And it's only been in the last years that her name has been spotlighted internationally. It was only in 1980 where an art historian made her work known, also with the help of relatives of Hilma af Klint who had been guarding her work and so on. But we have to maybe differentiate into two things. Hilma af Klint was extremely prolific, and she lived very long. And she had a very productive life as an artist. And she did a lot of figurative art. She did a lot of landscapes, portraits, also a whole lot of drawings. At the beginning, when she was very young, she was very interested in documenting nature, and she wanted to understand the connection of everything, of nature and humans and life and everything. So she did a whole lot of drawings, and mainly botanical drawings. So all that art it was exhibited during her lifetime, and it was known. But next to it, she did a lot of abstract art. Let's call it abstract art. Nowadays, it is classified under spiritual art. So she did this because she was convinced that there were spirits that communicated with her and requested her to paint this and to have a collective of works to be displayed in a temple. And the temple was thought to be where the spirits would come together and talk to her and communicate with her and some of her friends. So she did all this abstract art and never disclosed this. Those works were always hidden. They were not really properly exhibited. If we read closely into her biography, there are some records that some of these paintings were at some point shown to a very close group of people, but not in the classic way of having an exhibition for the open public. So some people had seen them, not really the general public. So, and it is this series of works of Hilma af Klint that have now the full attention of what she did and are maybe the most known paintings. So yeah, maybe we had to mention that just to kind of put her and her work a little bit in perspective on, and also the meaning of the film.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that, Gabby. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think something we should mention is that she really lived with one foot in the 19th century and one foot on the 20th century. She was born in 1862 and she died in 1944. Like you said, she had a long life. So it's remarkable for me anyway to think, you know, everything that she saw, I mean, up to when she died, and all the artistic movements that her life covers, right? So anyway.
Nene, absolutely. And this is something remarkable about the film. As I mentioned before, she did figurative painting, but also her most known work is the spiritual paintings she did for the series for the temple. And those are quite complex to understand because they are linked to this universe that she created of her own. And those are not quite easy to understand. You have to get into that wavelength and grasp what was the message that she was receiving from the spirits and what she wanted to convey. And this is something that they achieved very well in the film. They showed her creative process in a very plausible way. So you can really get the feeling of being close to her as an artist and what was going on in her mind. And I think not all films that are biopics achieve this. We have talked about many films here in our podcast about, I don't know, composers, also painters and so on. And to get into the mind of the artist is through a film is really rare. Mm. And I think this is something that they achieve here with some imagery that they used with a combination of certain frames. They would do close-ups of Hilma and see her, like try to portray her mind working and the color flashes passing through the frame. It would give you like a good glimpse of how it could have been for her to have the inspiration to paint this.
No, definitely. I think this is what surprised me about the film. First of all, the expectations were low, but not because of the subject. It's just what you told me, the director. But this is what really impressed me about the movie, because this is something that I always mention. I'm not sure if I've mentioned it in the podcast, but it's rare for a movie to be able to portray visually the mind of the artist. Like it's like you have a movie like Ray, for example, which is more about Ray Charles. It's not in the period that we usually cover, but I found this movie is the perfect example of what I'm trying to say, which is that this movie has every single event in his life, but none of the movie gives you the sense of how he was a genius, you know, and why. I mean, you see him playing and playing the music, but it doesn't get into his head, into how that genius built. And lots of movies have the same issue with writers, where you say, oh, this is a genius writer and became the most famous writer, but you don't get the sense of the writing and why it's so important and so special. in this movie, Lassie Armstrong found a very intuitive way of showing her mind. And I think this is the highlight of this movie to me, because the work was based on her spirituality. And there's a theme going through from beginning to end. She had a sister, a little sister. And should we spoil it, Gabby? Well, we always say, if you don't want spoilers, go watch a movie and then come back. There will be spoilers. And her little sister dies. And this death, I think, is the start of her kind of like lifelong search for meaning, essentially. Just trying to kind of understand where her sister went after she passed. And this is very well developed throughout, with a lot of flashbacks, sounds, you know, like you said, the close-ups, that is very well represented. And when she starts painting as well, especially this large, what became her most famous painting, this large, huge canvas, that is also very well done. So that leads me to our first question. What was your shining candle? Or, you know, maybe you have more than one shining candle?
Well, usually I'm very indecisive and I have more than one. But let me start with my definite shining candle. There was a lot of art in this film. And I love that. I think the peak, the most beautiful scene is where she's painting these big paintings in this atelier. So maybe to frame that scene, she got together with a group of friends who all came from the art school. They got together and they rented a huge studio, a beautiful atelier. And at some point she says, okay, I have this idea and I would like to paint this big format. The spirits are telling me that I should paint these big format paintings. And they portray this process very beautifully. The atelier is a huge room flooded with light, with daylight. And you see how she prepares the canvas, which is, it looked like more like a paper, like a canvas on paper, and how they roll it out on the floor, and how she prepares the color, and how she draws first the shapes on the canvas, and how they start painting, and everybody is collaborating and painting this huge painting. So this entire process of creation of this works was extremely beautiful and satisfying. As I said, there was so much art being shown and made in the film that was a huge delight. And at the end, they roll them up. They take them from the floor and they roll them up because they pull it from the ceiling. And this moment of seeing these paintings finalized, it was completely overwhelming because these works are just, as maybe said before, they are just truly overwhelming to the eye. The beauty, the radiation of colors and shapes. It was so unusual back then. I don't know. Surrealism was starting. Not surrealism, excuse me. Abstract art was beginning to bloom during those years. That was the beginning of the 20th century. There was Kandinsky doing his colorful compositions. And some other artists already exploring a lot with color and so on. But the color palette used was completely different to what Hilma chose. And also the shapes that she used. So they're so refreshing for the eye. It's like a burst of the burst of color and beauty. Yeah. So yeah, that scene where they create this paintings was definitely a highlight for me. And also because, as I mentioned, they show her a lot working. All the art that they showed, how she started painting as a young student in the art school, drawing, they show her many times making drawings, and they show her drawings as well. So you get a lot, a very good feeling of her capability, her skill, her talent, and yeah, her core as an artist. You see it very well throughout the film. So that was certainly a highlight for me. And maybe Nene, we also go into it. I think the entire aesthetics of the film are superb, very remarkable. Those are my shining candles. How about yours?
Thank you for that, first of all. Thank you. Definitely a highlight. All those scenes that you described, the movie is beautiful. Like, it's really beautifully shot and light. My shining candle, I will say, is the direction. Here I was, skeptical about Lasse Hallström. And now I'm saying that his direction is my shining candle. But it is, and it's just because what I just mentioned, that it gives us a sense of the inner life of Hilma and how that inner life, you know, was expressed in the painting, and actually how her, the film manages to show how her art evolve as well, and how her ideas evolve as well, which is rare as well. We have a good sense of her capability, but also what I really appreciated. Yeah, we have all those scenes where she's actually creating these paintings, and we will put links obviously in the podcast notes, so you can see her paintings. They were very large, and they were based on geometrical shapes, because what she wanted to do, her motivation was, I want to understand the secrets of life. That's what she said. And she's trying to portray in her paintings, she's trying to portray things that are completely invisible, right? She is abstract in the sense that she's trying to obviously portray not only as the abstraction of objects that we see, she's trying to portray abstract ideas into the canvas. You know, what's the soul?
She was trying to make the invisible visible. That's one of the most common descriptions of her work.
Exactly. And what she wanted to do was she wanted to do a map of the world. I think that's what the word that she, that or the expression that she said, I'm drawing a map of the world. She wanted to catalog the world, these invisible things in life, death, the beyond, the spiritual, the connection between nature, etc. So I really enjoy that in the movie. He did that through a lot of scenes that show her dreams, her memories, obviously her inner life. Again, a lot of scenes connecting her to her sister and how that event in her life influenced. So we can actually feel it. It truly is a show don't tell kind of movie, which I loved.
Very well. So Lasse Hallström reivindicated.
Well, the thing is, he's a veteran director, and he was working with two remarkable people in his life. This is a very interesting fact that both Hilmas, the two actresses, are part of his family. The young Hilma is his daughter, Tora Hallström. And older Hilma is his wife, Lena Olin. So I have the feeling that this movie was close to his heart very much. What about you? What do you think of it?
I also think that it had a special meaning for him. And this is why the script was so carefully written.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's different if you get a script by someone else and then if you write it yourself, because obviously your connection to the topic is, I think the approach is different, and then maybe you have a different connection to the story. So I would definitely assume that this was particularly special for him and why he then chose to cast his wife and daughter for this.
Yeah, role. But before
it was not aimed to, yeah.
Yeah, not to a mainstream audience or anything. I think it feels like a passion project. And the reason is because remember the word said to describe him that is bland, or I describe his filmmaking as bland or sentimental. And this was the furthest from bland. It was visually beautiful, which means he wasn't bland in his filmmaking. He made great choices, visual choices. That I hadn't seen before from him. So that I appreciate that. I have the feeling, that's why I have the feeling that this is a movie that they wanted to, it was important for them to get right. But that said, let's move on to the next question, which is about your sweaty week. One thing you didn't like about the movie. So Gabby, what is your sweaty week for Hilma?
Nene, it's hard because I really like this film, and from a technical perspective, I think they did all the right choices. From the technical side, there's really nothing that I would like to comment on a negative way. I guess, and you might agree with me on the sweaty week, there is one character in this story, one relevant male character, and that is Rudolf Steiner, who was a philosopher of those times and who Hilma admired a lot because of his thoughts and his writings and so on. So she had the opportunity to meet him on a couple of occasions in her life, and she was very eager to get his opinion on her work because she thought that he might understand what she was working on and what her goal was, that she had the hope that only he, who was pretty avant-garde in his philosophy, would be able to follow her vision. And she was disappointed always by this man. So, as I said, it's not really something about the movie. It's maybe a sweaty week in her life that she was kind of always looking for the validation of this man and never got it. Everything is very well portrayed in the film. Maybe I have to highlight that, how this dynamic took place, how he came into her life and what he caused in her life and what influence he had in her work and in her, attitude towards many things. But as I said, as a character, of course, it's very painful. Maybe it is very painful, again, to see in a story where we are trying to highlight the life of a woman and the work of a woman, it is always very painful to see how much damage a man, a male character, can cause on a woman. Yeah, so we saw here again history repeating. On one hand, we were being mesmerized by the power of Hilma, her work, and her entourage, because she, and they portrayed this very well in the film, she was surrounded by very strong women, also artists. And we loved this, to see another group of female artists being successful in their surrounding. They also painted a lot and worked a lot and exhibited. And so we were like, wow, they have this strong connection, this sorority bond as artists, as women, and so on. And then you see this guy coming into the picture and just diminishing Hilma, her vision, and her work. And that was just kind of painful. So The role of Rudolf Steiner, very well portrayed by the actor, was my sweaty wig because it pained me to see his effect on Helma. That was my sweaty wig.
Thank you for that sweaty wig. Yeah, we're giving the sweaty wig to history, essentially. It's not, the sweaty wig is not for the movie. The sweaty wig is just for, you know, the patriarchy again. So, yeah.
But that happened. The actor was very good, by the way, so...
Yes. It is a very... intriguing part of Hilma's story. It's an interesting part of Hilma's story because she was, in many ways, a visionary. She was so... She had such conviction. She painted for a long time before she started doing this series of abstract paintings or spiritual paintings. I believe she was 44 when she started painting this series of large paintings that she's now known for, that are revolutionary. So she had lived a life, right? And it's intriguing that despite this vision, conviction, the fact that she had created this group of women, that they met for 10 years every Sunday to paint, to talk about paint, to, you know, this was a remarkable work and conviction, but she was derailed by this one opinion. She stopped painting when she showed the paintings to this philosopher that she believed was the one who was going to understand that she was doing visually what he was doing in his philosophy, essentially. Like, this is the visualization of what you're doing. And he said, well, he didn't get it. And the worst of all, he said, people won't get it. People are not ready. And she was completely discouraged and she stopped painting. I think for 2 years or something like that after that. So it is an intriguing point that, you know, it's hard to understand a little bit that she would be derailed by this event, this opinion. She then continued, obviously she continued, but for a while she was completely discouraged. So yeah.
Nene, how about you? What is your sweaty week?
I've been thinking,
yes.
And I don't think I have a sweaty week.
But this is something new in our podcast. One film without sweaty week.
I want to be very clear here. Sometimes having a very strong sweaty week means that the movie is impactful because, you know, there's something that you feel strongly about. Right? So for me, not having a sweaty week, it means that, you know, it's this again, Lasse Hallström being just, you know, just kind of like flat a little bit.
He followed the book. He was like he was like the good student who just followed the book. And
didn't step out of
the line.
Exactly. So that's what I'm trying to say. Okay, let's go to the next question. A stolen costume. What piece of clothing would you like to keep? Or a stolen prop? What prop would you like to keep?
Nene, I would go for all the textiles in the houses they portray. Like, they had a lot of mantelpieces and napkins and sheets and white stuff, white textiles. And this is for me like the most cliche association with Scandinavia: white linen tablecloth and napkins. I die for white tablecloth.
I think
beautifully the. Set design was impeccable and they showed a lot of indoor, they have a lot of indoor scenes and a lot of living room, dining room scenes. And of course, a lot of tables. So you see this a lot. And it was like, I would take them all. The entire closet with the entire set of tablecloths and napkins and pillowcases. I take them all.
But you were.
I'm not even going to the clothing. No, I'm going to leave you the clothing. I'm taking all the tablecloths.
I don't think we have. I don't think. As your stolen prop, I don't think we have talked about napkins before. I agree, Gabby. Good. I can take the costumes. This is what I'm going to steal. Hilma, when she started to paint her large canvases with the women, she had this dark blue apron that was like a thick linen. And she had that apron. She also had like a dark blue skirt that she would tie with a belt, a leather belt, and she would tie it, and you know, the length of the belt would just fall across the skirt. I need these two things. I want this apron and this skirt. Well, three things, and this skirt with this belt. It's just so beautiful. She looked amazing.
Nene, somehow it suits you very well what you chose, because you love working clothing. You have often taken working attires from our film sets, so that suits you very well. I was actually expecting that you would take the blouses, because they used a lot of white delicate blouses throughout the film, and I would have taken them all. But anyhow, I'm sticking to my tablecloth. Next question, please.
Oh no! I'm just gonna comment on the costume. No blouses, because I'm going through a period of transition in what I like in terms of clothing. So I'm not so much into blouses anymore. I just needed to clarify.
Okay,
that.
Fair enough.
All right. Next question. Gabby, if given the chance, would you time travel to the period? Yes, no, and why?
I guess I would go. Maybe not late 19th century, but beginning of the 20th century. It's a fascinating time. It was still prior to World War I, where the world started to crumble down. Well, deeper.
Yeah.
It was like a seizure in humanity. So the early 20th century, I think it's fascinating, and specifically in this context of art, I would definitely go. There was a lot of things happening in the art scene that highly fascinate me. As I mentioned quickly before, the beginning of abstract art was being born, and I would love to see that. I would love to hang out around Stockholm and maybe see what other artists were doing during those days. I would go.
Very good.
How about you?
Yeah.
Do you feel attracted to this time of history and to this place? Because we have to always specify, we would travel to this part of the world.
Yeah, but the difficulty with this movie is that it takes place over 80 years. And like I said, it has a foot on the 19th century and a foot on the 20th century. So it's a whole lot of years to choose from. I was actually fascinated by seeing the 19th century in Sweden. It seemed to be a little bit more progressive than we've seen in other countries, like in other periods, in terms of what women were allowed to do. Of course, they were still severely repressed, but they were allowed to study painting, and they were allowed to paint nudes, nearly nudes, which was an interesting thing. We see one class where they are painting actually a male model. So they study anatomy. So they had more freedoms, at least in their education, their artistic education, which is interesting to me, because we have seen that in other places of the world, women would not be able to, you know, to paint certain topics and certain subjects, etc. Of course, I will go. But not. but you know the beginning of the 20th century.
Well, beginning of the, you know, like 1905, 1906, maybe until 1911, I would go.
Yeah, I guess so. I think so. I mean, it was very beautifully portrayed. Like life was portrayed in a way that seemed like women had a little bit more freedoms overall. So yeah, I will go. But I want to say something that we haven't mentioned yet, which is related to early 20th century, which is the choice that Hallstrom made of using real footage of Stockholm as the background scenes, like the background scenes, like the exteriors, all the exteriors, or a lot of, okay, not all the exteriors, a lot of the exteriors in the city, like for example, when she's walking with her friends to the art school, or when she's walking to the paint shop to get her supplies, and you know, anything that happens in the city, they used real footage, and they inserted the new film within, and that was so interesting. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's just an interesting way of doing it. Like innovation, it's innovative that he tried to do that. So when we saw the extras, the people walking around in their early 20th century costumes were actual people. These were not costumes. These are actual people wearing their actual clothes, because these were actual, you know, this is actual film from the time. So I think that was an interesting choice. And, you know, it'd be really nice to kind of stop and watch carefully, like pause and look at the, we didn't do that, but, you know, take the time to pause and see, you know, see the people being, you know, the kids and the people with their, you know, the clothing. Gabby, okay, so to finish, let's do our rating, which is from 1 to 10, Wicks and Candles. 1 is all the City Wicks, and 10 is all the Shining Candles. So how many Wicks and Candles do you give to Hilma?
My rating, based on the remark that Lasse Halmström was the good student who didn't step out of the line, the film has no obvious flaws. So one could say, okay, why not go for 10 Shining Candles, 10 Wicks and Candles, you know? It would lay on the hand. However, if I would do that, even though this film has a very meaningful meaning, very impactful meaning for me personally, it would be unfair to put this film at the same level than other films that I have personally rated with 10 Wicks and Candles. Because, as I said, it didn't have any obvious flaws. But it's certainly not a film that will ripple in movie history forever. It did a very good job portraying Hilma, her work, her vision, and of course her life. It is at the end a biopic, but it still doesn't break through to be an extraordinary film. It doesn't break molds and patterns and so on. It's a very well done film, and it did very good justice to Hilma and her story. So I'm going to go for an 8. I would go even for a 9 because of the emotional value this film has for me, but I'm just going to go for an 8. How about you, Nene? How do you rate? How many wicks and candles do you give Hilma from Lasse Hallström?
We are quite boring because our ratings are usually very close. Yeah, I will also give it an 8. Again, for the same reasons that you mentioned, no obvious flaws, but also nothing extraordinary. I think it is commendable, not really, not more than commendable. It's great that they you know, this is the start of making Hilma's story known to the mainstream. And this is a very well done movie. Like, it does justice to her character, to her story. So it's a very good beginning of bringing her story, you know, to mainstream audiences. It's the beginning. There's been a couple documentaries here and there, like little things here and there, but, you know, we always talk about this, how movies have the power to really bring a subject to, you know, the masses. So it does that very well. So I said I'm going to give it an 8 as well. I think we have to talk about the emotional... what's the word that you use? Emotional...
value. Emotional value.
Yes. I think the emotional value is very high here. The emotional value for me will be a 10 or even higher. And that's an interesting thing to talk about, because everybody, all of us, we have things that we like that we know they are not the most perfect representation of that art form. Like I say, we all have a song that we love, that we think, well, this song is not revolutionary in any way, but this is my song that touches me deeply for a very personal reason. So I think this movie does that because the reaction that you had was so visceral. And I completely understand that. I have had visceral reactions to different things like albums or movies and things that had sent me, you know, into deep thinking and changes, like actually life changes. So you had that very high emotional value, and I did too. And for the reasons that I'm going to state here, this film is about a painter that history, again, forgot. A women painter that history forgot, that is now just being discovered. It made me think about... all the artists throughout history, all the women artists throughout history that history has forgotten. First of all. Number two, it made me think about something else. Her success as a painter came after her death, posthumous, right? And it was the best representation was an exhibition that took place at Guggenheim in 2019, where her this series of painting that she always said that had to be presented all together in a very specific kind of building finally happened. And what made me really kind of broke my heart is the idea of the unfulfilled promise of an artist. I feel this very deeply myself because I'm trying to be a writer and this is my dream. So the feeling that she could not have that recognition during her life and, you know, the pain of the unfulfilled artist, of the unfulfilled promise of the artist. That for me was painful. that she painted her entire life without recognition. Which is not everything, of course. That's not the reason artists create. But what's the point of creating art if it's not communicating with others? Right? Having an impact, like, and having that feedback. Yeah, so it is extremely sad that, you know, it was after her death that her works were exhibited in totality and her name is being talked about. You know, and like her, there's millions of women artists, writers, poets, painters, dancers, who's, you know, they will die unfulfilled. And that to me is extremely painful. Okay, so that's I was a very serious comment there. But anyway, that's why the emotional value is very high for me, because it's a story about, you know, somebody who was such a extraordinary character, but, you know, outside of the time. What do you think, Gabby? Why do you think the emotional value was so high for you?
Nene, I appreciate that you bring this up, that you differentiate between the objective rating from us as a viewer, as a movie, and what personal meaning it has for us. Because, of course, art is very subjective, and if we consider this, if we consider a movie, a work of art, we are of course viewing this from a very subjective, and we are rating this from a very subjective perspective. So if I see it as a movie, I'm not claiming that I'm a movie critic, but if I'm just saying, if I'm rating this movie as a movie goer, as from the movie perspective, of course, I put it in the big landscape of films and cinematography, and I say, okay, this movie, from what I have seen so far, I would put it on an 8. But yeah, as a mere human being watching this, it has a completely different value, as it happens with every work of art for everybody. Some people might react to a painting completely different than the others, so it is very subjective. So yes, this film has a huge personal emotional value out of many things. As I said, it kind of somehow tickled my art lover soul. That moved me deeply. Also, the dynamic of women was beautiful to see, how they could relay on each other and how they created this very strong bond among them. That was beautiful. And I am also happy that you mentioned the last scene of the film, which is an extremely moving moment. Which also made me weep like a baby, I have to admit. and that, of course, has a huge had a huge impact on me, because, as you mentioned, it was like the fulfillment of the realization of an unfulfilled dream. How they, at the end of the film, they showed footage of her exhibition at the Guggenheim and how it matches so well with her vision back then of having her paintings in this temple. So, once the camera opens and shows the works of Hilma presented at the Guggenheim Museum in New York, it was like, this is exactly what you wanted. So, of course, this was very clever of the director to include this footage to close the circle for Hilma and, of course, for the viewer. So, yeah, if we differentiate it, yes, this movie has, for me, a higher personal meaning that it has as an isolated movie.
I think it's because we see ourselves in her story and the story of the other women painter, her friend. I think we see ourselves in that story, in that we all have some destiny that we want to fulfill. You know, especially if you want to, you know, if you want to make a change in your life, like you are trying to do, which is incorporate more art, and you are now studying art history again, you're back to art history. I think when we lose our sense of destiny, of what we are here on this earth to do, and we put it aside for whatever reason, you know, real life is tough, and it's hard to keep dreams alive. Very hard to keep dreams alive, especially where your dreams are unusual. So I think that's where I think for me that's where I see myself. How, you know, everybody has a calling, and I feel I have a calling, and obviously Hilma had a calling that she could not not answer, and you have a calling for studying art. And when we get in touch with that again and say, I cannot not listen to this voice. I need to listen to this voice to live, actually, to be alive and to live. Otherwise, there's no point in living. I think that's where you and I see ourselves in this movie. This is something that speaks to you. You had buried that love for art for a while, and now you're back to it. And for me, you know, writing or just doing exactly what we're doing, which is talking about movies and talking about art and talking about women in history, you know, I have a sense that this is what I want to do. I love it. So I think that's why the emotional value is high for us. Okay. So Gabby, thank you so much for this conversation, and thank you so much for recommending this movie. I really enjoyed it. It moved me. I watched it today again, and that final scene made me cry again. I actually cry like a baby as well. So thank you, Gabby.
Nene, thank you for being open to my suggestion and giving Lasse Hallström another chance. And for our beautiful discussion, this film will certainly remain as one of our most cherished one, because, as we mentioned, of the personal meaning that it has for us. It has been wonderful, and I love to go through the work of Hilma every time I have the chance. So thank you for giving me the opportunity of doing this together with you.
Well, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening. See you next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Stay tuned.
Bye.
Wicks and Candles is written, hosted, and produced by Andreina Romero and Gabriela Mjorken Romero. The image design is by Pamela Rollin. The podcast theme music is the Concerto for Two Violins in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach.
Wicks and Candles is on Instagram and TikTok at Wicks and Candles. Make sure to follow us and also subscribe to Wicks and Candles on your favorite podcast platform.